Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Boomer and the Babe Show, giving voice to 78 million boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Each day we have a different guest and a different topic. Our guests always have a nugget or two for anyone, regardless of where you are. We hope you enjoy the relaxed conversational style of the show. Nothing fancy, just boomers sitting around the table talking about stuff. Now, here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And yes, indeed, it is the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio. It is Thursday, June 16th, 2011, and we are broadcasting from our studio at the Feeding Arizona Complex in Youngtown, Arizona. We'll be getting to our guest in just a minute, but before I do, I want to invite everybody to go to our website, www.boomerandthebabe.com. Take a look around, go back with some degree of regularity and see the new things that are going to be coming up. And I want to remind everybody also that in addition to this radio program, we publish many books, ebooks, and our authors have their own shows on the Boomer and the Babe Network right here on Blog Talk. So come and visit us at Boomer and the Babe Radio, I'm sorry, blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe and see our authors and listen to some of the archives of their shows as well. We are a multifaceted, multimedia company, and anything to do with marketing your small business, we can certainly help you with, and that's part of what our message is and part of what it is that we actually do other than this radio show. So our guest today is Mr. Randy Patterson. Randy Patterson is the founder and developer of a website called Boomerosity.com, and he is going to have a lot of fun, and we're going to have a lot of fun with him today talking about all that Boomerosity.com is and a lot of interesting talk and conversation, so sit back and enjoy it. And Randy, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show.
Thanks, Pete. I'm glad to be on.
And I forgot to do my little thing here that I'm Pete Peters and...
And I'm Deborah Brown. I was wondering if that was going to happen. I was thinking, oh, wait, did we lose our Elvis voice all of a sudden?
Yeah, we lost our Elvis voice. Speaking of boomers. So go ahead, Deborah, start us off. You normally do.
Well, I would like to welcome you to the show, of course. And I would also like to ask you for what we call a two-minute movie. And that is your life in 2 minutes. You can go back as far as you want. Start with when you were born. That's fine. And come forward to today, sitting with us here talking on the Boomer and the Babe Show about your love, which is Boomerosity.
Talk fast, Randy. You've only got 2 minutes.
You know me well already. Well, I'm Randy Patterson. I was born in Eastern Tennessee in 1959, and so I'm smack dab in the middle of that baby boomer demographic. Was raised all over the South and moved to your neck of the woods, the Phoenix, Arizona area, back in the late 60s. And in my so-called adult life, I've lived in Texas, Arkansas, and Arizona. And in recent years, I've started a little website called Boomerosity.com, and it's just geared for people like us. My real job, my day job, is in the tech industry. I manage relationships with outsourcing partners, and they're U.S.-based partners, so they don't go offshore. And I have a lot of fun doing that as well, but that's what pays my bills, and my passion is Boomerosity and all things tied to it. So it's been received very well, and we just do things on there much like you guys do on your radio show and on your network, where we just look at the positive side of things and have fun remembering, but not living in the past, just being able to just enjoy what we did and what we're doing both. So I tend to be introspective on things when I look at things from our past, and I find that a lot of people enjoy that too, especially the fun people I get to interview. So as you can tell, I'm the shy, quiet type, and so you may have to draw questions and answers out of me, but I will do my best to answer as well as I can for you.
Just uphold your end of the bargain here now, Randy.
So tell me what Boomerosity is. What does that mean? Where did that word come from?
Well, you know, quite honestly, my wife encouraged me to launch the website, I looked at a lot of different names that would be obvious and appealing to our demographic. And when I saw that most of those were already taken up, I had to get creative. And I don't know why. I actually don't recall how the name popped in my head, but I started looking up the word boomerosity. And it took a long time to find out what the suffix to that or the subset to that word, which is osity, which means the essence of or the, you know, being like. And so I thought, okay, well, this is kind of cool. Thought of Travelocity and some of the other osities we've heard about in the business world. And I got the more I got to thinking about it, the more I liked the name. Now, it's mispronounced a lot. It's called Boomer City and Boomer O City and things like that. But the whole intent of it is about the essence of being a baby boomer and everything that is involved with our generation, our demographic. So we would have what I would call our big brothers and sisters who would be the ones that were involved in the mid-60s type of music and pop culture. And then there's our generation and, you know, that were born in the late 50s and very, very early 60s. That I think is the cool group. And then there's our kid brothers and sisters that were born in that tail end of that demographic and who probably wound up finishing college somewhere in the mid-80s. So I try to include some of that as well. But the bulk of the focus is in the area of, like, classic rock, TVs, movies, things of that nature. Predominantly music, though.
Well, that's amazing that you coined a word, and I like that word a lot, and I get it. And we have one that we didn't actually coin it. Well, we made it up, but then we found out that somebody else had also been using it. But boomerdom, boomer, and then the letters D-O-M at the end, is not a place, but it's a state of mind. And
right.
It's a very cool word. And frankly, if someone Googles the word boomerdom, I believe that my book, Celebrating Boomerdom, is probably still on the front page of Google.
Wow.
Maybe like 7 of the first 10 instances of the word boomerdom is me. So that's pretty cool. So
yeah.
So I like the idea that we are making up our own words to fit what we need. Doesn't that sound about right?
Yeah, as long as we don't make up our own stories, then we're doing just fine. So.
Oh, well, we've got plenty of stories anyway, don't we? So what I think that you said that your wife inspired you to go ahead and do this work. Was she the first person? Was she the first person that actually inspired this?
Well, I'll kind of rewind just a little prior to that. As I mentioned before, I grew up in the Phoenix area, graduated from Moon Valley in 1977. And we recently had a 30-year class reunion. And I was the goober that was doing all the monthly emailings and saying silly things, but I was relating a lot of stuff to our day and our age to try to get interest into the class reunion that we had. And when it was winding up, two of my teachers, Mrs. Gail Myers and Mrs. Bonnie McInerney, both had complimented my writing and said, Randy, you really need to do something with that. And I don't know if it was just to get me off the streets and out of their hair or if they were sincere, but I took them as being sincere and started investigating things. And I thought, well, if I'm going to write, I got to have a passion about it, just like I did the class reunion. And so it just took me back to our day and started doing a lot of writing before I even knew where the avenue was going to be. And as I was sharing with my wife what I was doing and, you know, why I was holed up in that office all the time, she said, well, why don't you start a website? And I blew it off. I didn't think it made any sense at all. And, of course, I was wrong, and she was right, and I realized that, and it led to boomerosity.
Well, it's amazing. You know, your path is somewhat similar to mine in as much as my wife mentioned, why don't you go on internet radio, and I kind of blew it off. Because we had been doing terrestrial radio, and I said, well, internet radio, that's not radio. And as it turns out, that internet radio is radio, and we get more people listening to us on the internet than we ever had in terrestrial radio here in Phoenix. So, sometimes I guess as a male of the species, we just have to kind of choke it back and say, okay, dear, you were right.
Yeah, for us troglodytes, and I write about troglodytes on my site, but for us troglodytes, sometimes that club we have in our hands has got to be used over our heads by our lovely and faithful wives, doesn't it? So.
Yeah, that's true. Now, you said you graduated in 1977 from Moon Valley High School here in Phoenix.
Yep.
Now, where is Moon Valley?
35th Avenue and Cactus, the school. That's not the subdivision. It's not the subdivision over there on Thunderbird and 19th, but 35th Avenue and Cactus, just a little west of 35th Avenue there.
Well, I didn't remember exactly, but I thought that was it, because I have a stepson that graduated from Moon Valley High School.
Oh, wow.
And he graduated from Moon Valley High School, I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. I frankly, I don't remember the year, but how old are you now?
I'm 50. You had to ask me. I'm old enough because I'm forgetting. It's 52. I'll be 52 in October.
Yeah, he's a little younger than you are. Tad is
41.
45 is exactly
45.
10 years older than our daughter. That's amazing. So there's this is that 2 or 3 degrees of separation thing again.
Yeah.
So
well, what's funny is some of the kids I went to school with are currently teachers there. One good friend is works in the administrative office there, and then there's still I think one or two teachers that were teaching when I was there, and they're still teaching there at Moon Valley. And if they're not, they're just retiring. So I envy the people that got to stay there in the Valley of the Sun and let their roots grow deeper and see the generational thing happen there. I'm very jealous of it.
But your material has not stayed in the Moon Valley area. You're read all over the world. I know that because I'm looking at a list that includes everything from Argentina to Turkey and everything in between. So talk about how did that happen? How did you build your list of devoted followers, let's say?
Well, I like to laugh and say that there's been a lot of bathroom walls written on, but, you know, it's just the beauty of the Internet. I mean, I have to say that if it wasn't for computers and if it wasn't for the power and the robustness of the Internet and the availability of information, this thing would have never gotten out of my mailbox, let alone, you know, getting any traction anywhere. Quite frankly, one thing's led to another, and I have to say that it's from the power of the people that I've had the fun and privilege of interviewing, and those people going on the road. I mean, and we can talk about this in a moment, but some of these people are still very active in their careers, you know, performing in stages all over the world. I mean, Rick Derringer and Gary Wright, two people I've interviewed, are presently touring in Europe right now. Well, I can see the effects of that from Google searches drawing people to Boomerosity for the interviews I've done with those people. The Soviet Union is a big draw right now. So it's people trying to find and connect with, you know, the idols that they have, the icons, people doing research, maybe trying to find a song, and I write off the lines from songs and reminisce that way. And I think that's what's really drawing a lot of the traffic, primarily. Secondly, of course, when I do interview these people, they're very kind enough to put the links to those interviews on their websites or mentioning them in their blogs, and then that has kind of a cascading effect and a nuclear effect, if you will, where it kind of builds and feeds on itself. So one thing leads to another, and I've got regular readers from literally all over the globe. I hear from them occasionally, and it's just an amazing thing. But I have to give the credit to the people I've interviewed. They're the ones that are the draw. It's not about me. It's about them and people wanting to know more about them and what they're up to lately.
Well, this phenomenal growth that you've had, what has it led to? I mean, what is the size of your, well, I guess they always say, what is your list look like? How big is your list? I mean, you must have people, as we all already know, from all over the world, but the numbers must be pretty substantial as well.
Well, I think it depends on how you want to qualify that. I mean, I don't want to leave the impression with your listeners that I'm like the next Rolling Stone magazine coming up. It's really not about that. I think it's a little early in the stages of social networking and the blogosphere to really determine what is considered a successful site. Like I said, I don't make my living off of this. It's a passion of mine, a labor of love. Sometimes more labor than love is like kind of balances out there somewhere. But what I find, and I can only judge this by myself, it's the quality of the visitors and what the web stats call is the unique visitors. I mean, there's people that are religious in following up and reading what's on the site, which is very humbling and encouraging to me. So, you know, I think I usually don't give out statistics, but I do say that the website has very consistent and growing international numbers that are they're not worth charging advertising for yet. It's getting there. But it is. It's a very encouraging statistic to see the consistency from regular unique visitor counts as well as the frequency that they visit the site. And it's it has so far this year, it has grown every month of the year. Last year, it was a little roller coastery there, if that's a word. But what I'm finding this year that one month has built on the other. And it's just not quite exponential, but it's getting there.
Is this something that you, when you retire from your tech industry work, is this something that you look forward to having as a supplemental income and hopefully it'll grow to that point? And then when you're done with your formal work experience, this could be something that you have as a sideline that can be done from anywhere you travel and so on and so forth. Is that kind of a plan that you have in mind?
Absolutely. The plan is to, I guess, the proper word that they like to use in web stuff is monetize the site. And being the honest and ethical guy I think I am, I couldn't in good conscience charge anybody advertising fees to be on my site because I just don't feel like the traffic is there yet. But the plan is when the traffic is justifies advertising rates, I do plan on having that available. I plan on giving advertising away to certain charities to help promote their good works. And hopefully it'd be something that would be synergistic to the types of stuff that people see on the website. But to be real truthful with you, Pete, if I won the lottery today or my rich uncle got out of the poorhouse and left me all of his money, if I could just not have my career today, tomorrow, Boomerosity would be my full-time job. Even if it didn't make any money, that's how much I love doing this.
Well, it's that passion thing, and obviously that drives people a long way to be successful in whatever it is that they choose. So you're to be commended for that, and quite frankly, we're doing a little bit of the same. We're always looking for different opportunities and different ways that we can monetize the site, so to speak, and monetize the brand, the Boomer and the Babe. The how we got to be the Boomer and the Babe is a story in itself, which we won't go into here, but it's been an interesting 6 years, I guess. It's been 5 or 6 years since we started on the radio, on terrestrial radio here in Phoenix, and eventually went to the internet, and not that long ago. So it's been a labor of love. There's no doubt about it. And sometimes it's, as you well know, it certainly is just that, a labor of love.
Yes, absolutely.
We're trying to give birth here. It's the gestation period is really, really long.
Yeah. There's all sorts of one-liners I could go with on that, but I'm just going to leave well enough alone.
Yeah,
I think that's probably a good plan. So go back to the website for a minute and tell me what exactly is the most popular feature, because I know you have a lot going on there, but I'm sure that people have let you know what they like best. Do you have a sense of that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the statistics that we were just talking about a minute ago bear this out. Clearly, the interviews that I've been fortunate enough to conduct are the biggest draw. And quite honestly, I just Deborah, when I started this, I honestly thought that, you know, if your listeners go to the site, they'll see a lot of different things. They'll see interviews, they'll see reviews, they'll see a tab on there called Weekly Spews. And that's honestly what I thought was going to be, if I was going to do anything with this website, I assumed that maybe somewhere along the road, some small newspaper in middle America somewhere might be interested in picking it up, if for no other reason but to fill some space. And, you know, I might make $1.298 off of it every once in a while. But I never, even though I planned very early on to have the occasional celebrity interview, you know, I made a long list of who was on my wish list of who I wanted to talk to. But I never in my wildest dreams imagined that the interviews would be as many as they were. I thought my first 12 months, maybe 4 interviews. At the end of the first 12 months of Boomerosity, I had 25 interviews that I had conducted. Almost each one of them, you know, a different individual. There's, I think, one that I interviewed twice, and for different reasons. But I ended the first 12 months of Boomerosity with 25 interviews. Wound up finishing the second year right at 50. So I'm averaging maybe around, you know, a little more than 2 interviews a month. Some interviews, some months have more than others. But clearly, I mean, when you look at the range of the people that I've had the privilege to interview, whether they're icons like Joey Kramer, the drummer for Aerosmith, or Ted Nugent, or Tommy James from Tommy James and the Shondells. I mean, and I, you know, I could list them all, and they all have been just phenomenal people. But then there's been the behind-the-scenes people, people like Ken Mansfield that was the head of Apple Records in the U.S. He's written 3 books about his years with the Beatles. He was on that rooftop concert that the Beatles gave just before they disbanded. He's the guy in the white coat up on the rooftop there at Apple Records. Fascinating guy to talk to. There's Michelle Bramlett, that's the daughter of Delaney Bramlett from Delaney and Bonnie and Friends. I'm interviewing her stepmom, Bonnie Bramlett, and that interview will be out next month sometime. There's been, I mean, Mark Farner from Grand Funk Railroad. I mean, those are the names that draw people in. But it's not been just music. I had the privilege of interviewing Ken Corday, whose parents were the creators of Days of Our Lives. And he came out with a very fascinating book last year. And I get to interview him about it and other authors. And I've got a long list of actors and actresses that I have contacted that we'll be talking to in the coming months. But clearly that is the interviews are what are the biggest draw. Second to that is the reviews I do of those people's work, whether it's new CDs, DVDs, concert DVDs, things of that nature. Occasionally a product or two that I think my readers might be interested in. And that's the second biggest draw are the various concert reviews too, I forgot to mention. But those are the biggest draws that the site has that people tend to gravitate to. I wish it was my store that I have all the cool Boomerosity stuff on, but people aren't too terribly interested in wearing a big smiley face on their chest with wrinkles around the lips and eyes, but I don't know why.
I don't either. Well, I do know that right now, in this particular day and age, and probably it's been this way forever, but right now I know it just because of what we're doing, storytelling and the people who tell stories are the winners right now. And really doing a good storytelling is great. And when you can interview someone and pull out that wonderful, the either the nostalgic value or the history and all that stuff, that's the best. And I know that there are people that are going to get away from us, if you will, because they're older and they are maybe the icons that we liked watching on TV when we were younger or something like that. And if you don't get to them soon enough, you just need to quit your IT job or your tech job and stop, you know, stop messing around and get more interviews because these people are not going to last.
That's right.
Is there anybody in particular that has gotten away from you that you wish you had, you know, just done it sooner?
Yeah. Unfortunately, as everybody knows, in the last week or so, you know, the world lost James Arnaz. You know, he was Marshal Matt Dillon from Gunsmoke. And when I created my wish list of people to interview, I'm a spreadsheet guy, so I keep spreadsheets on just about everything. And I created this massive spreadsheet of everybody I wanted to interview, where their websites were, who to contact, things of that nature. And as this, you know, this rocket ride called Boomerosity.com, you know, took off and threatened to leave me behind, and I was holding on to dear life, certain names kept going farther and farther down the list. Well, I think it was last year or a year before, somewhere, Mr. Arnaz lost his brother, another actor, Peter Graves, just as I was getting ready to email him. And I thought, well, it'd be kind of uncool to ask for an interview right after he lost his brother. Well, 2 days before Mr. Arnaz passed away, I'd submitted my request for an interview. I did not get a response, and then I read, like, the day after he passed that he had, in fact, passed. But, I mean, what a phenomenal person to be able to talk to. It would have been somebody, you know, just as iconic. I mean, after all, the guy had the longest-running TV show that took many years. I think it was, what was it, L.A. Law or somebody that finally met up with him. But 20 years, 20-something years on TV. I mean, what a story that guy could tell, insights. You know, and what I love to see, and you'll see this in a lot of the interviews, is what are these icons, these treasures that we get, that we still have with us on this earth? What is their insight between how the world is today in their area of expertise and what it was like back in their heyday? And there's positive and negative changes, and they give tremendous insight into that and even have some solutions to problems within their business today. But, you know, to have been able to talk to James Arnaz, I mean, wow, that would have been just unbelievable and a personal thrill for me. And I'm always going to regret that I never got to speak with him.
Well, it's amazing because, as you well know, there are several people right here in the Phoenix market that are probably fit very well into that those categories you were talking about. One is certainly Alice Cooper, who lives here, and another one that I had the pleasure of listening to him speak at a chamber function is Hugh Downs. Hugh Downs is still seems to be in pretty fair health, and although he's advertising for hospice, but he's a voice of hospice. But nonetheless, he certainly seems to be the same old Hugh Downs that he always was, you know. One of the questions that I wanted to ask is when I noticed that you have all these interviews and all these relatively well-known people, certainly some more known than others, but nonetheless recognizable, how do you get to them? What do you do to get that interview? And then,
or is that a trade secret?
And then once you have them, I mean, do you do a phone interview? Do you capture it on a recording? How does that work for you?
It varies. I mean, I always record, so that's the easy answer. I mean, early on, you know, I knew a couple people that knew a couple people. And as you guys well know, it's just cracking that veil, that wall, that crust that's there that keeps you outside and them inside. That's always the hardest thing to do. I mean, if you go up to a respectable name like a Rick Derringer or a Barry Maguire or an Edgar Winter and ask for an interview, and they say, well, what do you do? And you point them to your website, and there's, you know, to maybe one other interview, and it's like, okay, I'm going to talk to you. Why? But these guys were very, very, very gracious. They, you know, Barry Maguire, I've been a big fan of his since I was a teenager primarily because of his involvement in Christian music. Rick Derringer, I had the privilege of meeting at the Dallas International Guitar Festival that takes place every April here in the Dallas area. So, you know, being able to walk up to him, he's very approachable, just an incredible guy to talk to, and he was gracious enough to grant me an interview. Once you get, you know, of course, he knew Edgar Winter, done a lot of work with Edgar, you know, Edgar's brother of Johnny Winter. Johnny wound up, I was able to interview about a year after I interviewed Edgar. Once you get those kinds of names on there, then people look at you and say, well, you know, you must not be too much of an idiot. I guess I'll give you a few minutes. So, you know, you start getting introduced to people. I do a lot of sleuthing on the internet. I I have kind of a reputation of being able to find hard-to-find information on the Internet. But I think the biggest thing, Pete, is just not being afraid to ask. And it is a business transaction. Let's be fair about it. I mean, what am I offering them? I'm offering them some positive exposure. I don't care anything about a negative interview. I don't want that. I don't have any need for it in my life, and I'm sure they don't have a need for it in theirs. So I guarantee them a positive interview, not a puff piece, but a positive interview that will keep things positive. I ask them in advance, is there anything that's, you know, out of bounds on the conversation, you know, in the conversation. And I give them another courtesy. When I'm all done with my piece, or I have a pretty good idea of what it's going to look like, I send it to them in advance and ask them, do I have anything misspelled? Do I have anything conveyed incorrectly? Is there anything you want to restate? And, you know, they look at that and they think, well, dang, this guy's not out to cut my throat or anything. Let's, you know, I like that. And so they tell their friends about this goober out in McKinney, Texas, and they say, hey, he's not too bad to talk to. Go ahead. And I've gotten several interviews that way. Now it's to a point where I have agents and PR people and people of that type contacting me asking if it's okay to send CDs or DVDs or, hey, do you want to talk to my client, that type of thing. So I will never quit sleuthing, trying to find them, but that's exactly how I do it. It's a lot of time emailing people. And really, if, I mean, if there's other people out there who want to do this kind of thing, the biggest thing I have to say is, A, don't waste their time. Know what you're doing. Know what you want to ask. Be respectful of their time. But first and foremost, you can't be afraid to ask for the interview. And don't be afraid to be turned down. The worst thing they're going to say to you is no. And I've heard that a lot.
Well, it was certainly that way. I used to publish a golf newspaper, and it was certainly that way when I was looking to speak and talk to some of the golfers. I had the good fortune of having a very, very short, not even worth recording to the point of publishing it in any way, conversation with Arnold Palmer. My coup de grace was the interview that I did with Fuzzy Zeller. And and Fuzzy, his agent said that he was going to be going out to Industry Hills in California to do a benefit tournament with Occidental Petroleum, and that if I wanted to fly into Chicago, he could get me the open seat next to him in first class, and I could fly and have cross-country conversation with Fuzzy Zeller on the airplane.
Wow. Well,
I was so wet behind the ears, and I was so strapped for cash. There was no way that I was going to get over there. And I stopped short of saying, is Fuzzy paying for the ticket? But but anyhow, nonetheless, I did catch Fuzzy in the airport at LAX, because I was living in San Diego at the time, and I drove up from San Diego to LAX, and I still have that recording somewhere of Fuzzy talking to me in the airport and all the announcements in the background, final boarding call and so on. And finally he says, I just got to go. You know? But we had a nice conversation, and I had actually played golf with him in a pro-am in 84 out in San Diego in the San Diego Open. So, but then from that, I got to have some other interviews with some other people and got into press rooms and had quotes in the newspaper and things like that from these folks. So you're right. It one begets the other, and it just seems to snowball sometimes, hopefully, and keep going downhill that way.
Well, I think, too, when people see that you have a passion for what you do and that it's in the same area of interest that they have, then the hair's let down. They become much more open to you. And there's a certain level of trust that you have to develop very quickly early on in the interview, or at least in the preliminary lead up to the interview, so they can see that you're a person of your word. But what I found kind of funny, and I think you probably run into this too, is in a recent interview that I had with, in fact, just posted I think last month, Donna Lauren. Oh my gosh, what an incredible lady she is. And towards the end of our chat, she started interviewing me. Why do you do what you do? You know, I know you're not making any money at this, but what drives you and motivates you? And I was like, well, hold it. I'm not prepared for this interview. What's this about? But people sense that, and I'm sure it was with you with your golf endeavor, publication endeavor there, and as it is with this radio broadcast. If you have a passion for it and people have even the slightest interest, they'll gravitate towards you. And even if it's just a mild interest, pretty soon they're pretty excited because you are, and that's what I'm finding in this.
So I think we've kind of touched on this, but let's kind of go back over it a little bit if we haven't. Let's talk about some of the responses and feedback you get from your readers. But I'm going to ask it in a little different way, and that is there a difference in feedback and response from your older readers to your younger readers? And what is what might some of those differences be, if there are any?
You know, that's a good question. I never thought of that one before, but you know, just off the cuff, I would have to say that the difference in responses really depend on who it is that's been interviewed. And it's really not, I can't really say that it's a generational boundary that differentiates one from the other, but I'd have to say it depends on how much of a fan those people are or what kind of controversy might be tied to a particular name. For instance, you know, there's a wonderful lady that I interviewed a while back by the name of Patricia Morrison. She, if any of you or your listeners have seen the movie The Doors, there's a scene in that movie where a journalist has a a relationship with Mr. Morrison, and they get married in what is called a hand fasting ceremony. It has to do with kind of an Irish cultic type of ceremony, most commonly tied to witches, and I don't mean brooms and pointy hat type witches, but more European type of witch practice. And that person, that scene, even though not entirely accurate, is based on some reality that really took place in Mr. Morrison's life. And that lady, even though she did not play that part, she played the part of the witch in the movie, or the priestess, if you will, that was conducting the ceremony, the redheaded lady. And if you get the, not the, you know, Oliver Stone better pay me for this plug of the movie, but there's, if you get the collector's pack of the Doors movie, there's a second disc in there that's chock full of interviews, and it gets pretty raw. The language gets a little raw in there, but one of the people that's interviewed is Patricia. Wonderful, wonderful lady. Just a fascinating lady to talk to. But you know what? She draws a lot of very vicious criticism because of her claims of being a widow or the widow of Jim Morrison. I've gotten all sorts of emails from people criticizing her sanity, her story, even the actual practice of hand fasting. And I've had witches contact me and say, you know, she's all wrong on this. And it's just been unbelievable. So there's been those people. Then there's the people that just love Jim Morrison and anything to do with him, and they just think it's the coolest thing that I got to interview Patricia. But Patricia and I stay in regular contact. She's a wonderful lady. I consider her a friend. And, you know, as such, I defend her. So there's that kind. That's a negative thing. The positive thing always is the fans, though. The fans are the people that I interview, and they just love it. They want to learn more. They thank me for interviewing them and turning them on to their websites or their latest music, that type of thing. And that's usually those two extremes are what I usually get in the way of feedback.
I want to just interject something here. I've got the chat line open, and there's a message to you from a person by the name of Deedleg, and he says, good to hear you, Randy. You make us MVers proud, class of 78.
All
you know that person?
Yes, I do. They just need to watch out for the freshman holes, and they'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay. Well, glad to pass along that personal message to your fans.
Yes, you need to go sell some real estate, man. The market's down, so.
Okay. I guess that explains what he does for a living, or tries to do for a living here in Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking before we came on the air about old songs coming back around and being new songs for this generation, and how funny we find that at our age when our children and grandchildren, you know, get so excited about a new song, and it's like, oh my gosh, that is a retread, big time. Do you have any thoughts on that, about how, gosh, can they not think of new songs right now? Are there no lyrics left? I mean, what's going on? Why do they have to do that?
Well, I bring this, you know, I kind of touch on the subject with a lot of people that I interview as to their opinions as to why our music still has legs. And, you know, some people are trying to figure out where the hottest flavor of the week was 2 years ago today. And, I think it boils down to, I mean, really that's our foundation of contemporary music and everything tied to it. If you look at what is on Guitar Hero or Rock Band and those types of games, I mean, the majority of the music that's on there is of the classic rock genre. I mean, you have Aerosmith, you have Rick Derringer, you have all those guys on there that are just, you know, they're the monsters of our genre. And whatever it is that they've done right about writing their music, I think that's just foundational to anything new today that has any hope of having any longevity and being remembered at all. I think I'd bet you a dollar to a donut that it has its roots into our music of our day. But to your point of people re-recording or, you know, covering it in some way, you take a song like, you know, Play That Funky Music by my good friend Rob Parisi. I mean, Rob, if you're listening, I know you're just making buku money off of this, and he, you know, that's the song he's known by. He had Adam Lambert singing it on American Idol a couple of seasons ago and did a phenomenal job of it. But it has that hook, it has that drive and that feeling, and I think it also just has something to do with the fact that our demographic is still alive and kicking and get a kick out of hearing someone else singing a song from their past. So I think that has a lot to do with it, but it's I just think that we just had a lot of dang good songwriters back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s that knew how to do it. It wasn't a formula. It was something that came from their heart. I mean, Keith Richards says it's a, you know, he's channeling some sort of spirit or something. Maybe. I don't know. But all I know is that these men and women have just written some phenomenal stuff that transcends generational boundaries. And I think that long after we're dead and gone, I think it's still going to be the case. We just won't be around to say, hey, we told you so.
Well, my memory that sticks with regard to that very topic is my daughter, and I mentioned this briefly as before we came on air, my daughter came to me one time and said, Dad, there's this really, really cool song. You really need to hear it. And I said, what's the name of it? And she says, Blue Moon. And I says, oh, really? I said, do you know the history of that song? And she goes, what do you mean? I says, well, your grandparents used to dance to that song in the big dance halls back in the 30s and 40s. I said, and then it became the Blue Moon that I grew up with listening to, and I kind of sang it. She goes, oh, no. And I said, oh, yes. Now, what is this song, and how new is it? So we have that little standing thing every now and then about Blue Moon and what Blue Moon really is like and where it started. But it's a perfect example, really, of exactly what we were talking about. These things, because they have legs, because they have the capacity to stay, they will come back. They will come back possibly in a completely different form, but the essence will still be there. And I'm still waiting for the miniskirt to come back.
It's already back. I'm just not paying attention.
The way the fashion industry goes, it may be guys wearing them, so be careful what you ask for. So.
That's very true.
Well, you know what else is interesting about the music that we're talking about and coming back or not? The big players are still singing their own stuff anyway. Rod Stewart and Stevie Nicks just did a concert here not that long ago in Phoenix, and of course it was a packed house. You know, they're just, frankly, in some ways, they're just as good as they ever were. And that's pretty doggone amazing.
Well, and look who the big tour draws are. I mean, people joke and everything about the Rolling Stones, but doggone it. I mean, they go out there every 3 or 4 years, and for 2 years solid, they go out there and they kick the world's butt. And they put on a phenomenal show. And they're anytime they're touring, it's always one of the biggest grossing tours, and I mean in financial terms, not in Ozzy Osbourne terms, of the touring season that, you know, during that time. You look at Bruce Springsteen. I mean, good Lord, the guy still can pack, you know, all sorts of houses. Paul McCartney. I mean, it's still those big acts that are drawing. I mean, they're not the only ones, but those that are out there still doing it. And even down at the lower level sized venues. I mean, look around. Look up your – I challenge your listeners to look up their favorite icon or their favorite band from the 60s or 70s. They'd be surprised how many of them are still out there. They're still touring. They may not be packing arenas, but they'll be at a casino, at a smaller venue, like in the Phoenix area, let's say, like a, I don't know if it's still called Celebrity Theater, but, you know, whatever its name is now, you know, the theater in the round, they'll still be touring and still giving it all that they've got. And you can even, a lot of times now, the industry has changed so much, oftentimes you can go and meet these people after their shows. They're very, very cordial to their people. They know that the fans are who made them what they are, and you can go up to any of them and just ask them to sign something or just shake their hand. They love to be appreciated. That's another back to your earlier question, Pete, about the, you know, how do I get in with them? They want, you know, like anybody else, they want to be remembered, and they like hearing that people still appreciate what they've done and what they do. And that's really what it boils down to. So if you know, if Stevie Nicks is coming through your town, go see him. Now, you probably won't get to meet her, but, you know, there's some of these others that are hitting the casinos and the smaller clubs. I mean, gosh, go see them. Oftentimes, more often than not, they're signing autographs out in the lobbies afterwards. Grand Funk Railroad's another one that's doing that. Dave Mason was just in town recently here in the Dallas area, met with fans out in the lobby of the theater that he played. I mean, he's a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. I mean, can you imagine being able to meet a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, shake their hand, thank them for all the memories, and, oh, by the way, would you mind signing my album cover? I mean, how cool is that? That shows the class and the level of maturity and at peace with themselves that these people are. They, you know, their egos have been in check for a long time, and I think that's where the draw is, too.
Well, it's amazing because you find these, like you say, you find these people. We had occasion to Deborah more so than myself, but we were part of a group in Oceanside, California, when we lived there, that put on a concert series at the Bandshell in Oceanside. It was 10 years. And through Deborah's work, we had access to several of those entertainers. The Oak Ridge Boys were one that we enjoyed more than many. And we had occasion then, when we were in Arizona, to actually go to an event that they were doing here, went backstage, met them, had a conversation with them before their show. And like you say, it was absolutely amazing that they are still as well, everything that you would hope that they would be as far as cordiality and so on and so forth. That's one thing that I've noticed about them. And the other thing is that I've noticed about them, some of them, i.e. Rolling Stones, it's amazing they're still alive. Because of all the stuff that they were involved in.
Yep. But you know, these guys, they have reputations from their past. But when you look at somebody like Mick Jagger, I mean, the guy's a health nut. You know, he runs, he keeps up good shape. I don't know what Keith does to stay as preserved as he is, but Mick, I mean,
he's pickled.
A health nut. Yeah, there's that whole blood transfusion rumor of urban legend there too. So, but you know, these guys have, you know, when you see them now, I mean, you know, time is not kind to everybody, and with some people, their past is affecting their present, but they're so gracious about it, and they're just. You mentioned the Oak Ridge Boys. I had the privilege of interviewing Dwayne Allen over the phone on a kind of a related piece about their song "Thank God for Kids," And we have a sportscaster here by the name of Dale Hansen that does a piece every Christmas based on that song. And so I get to talk to Dwayne about that song. You know, nicest guy you'll ever meet. But all these guys are just so, you know, they're so appreciative of their fan base. Somebody that blew my mind was William King from the Commodores. Interviewed him by phone because they just did a re-release of Night Shift to commemorate the passing of Michael Jackson. I think it was the one-year anniversary of his passing. Talked to him by phone. He invited me to their show they were doing here in the Dallas area that weekend. Went backstage, and I waited for the meet and greet to finish. And when I walked up and just introduced myself, I said, "Mr. King, Randy Patterson." Before I could even finish, he gave me the biggest bear hug I think I'd ever gotten. And, you know, for a poor dumb old country boy like me, I thought that was pretty cool of them. And these guys do that for everybody. They're so gracious to their fans. And I tell people, don't be afraid to go and say hi and tell them what they mean to you in your past.
You know, I think that we are, as a group, the Boomers, and it might be that this has happened in other generations, but I have a sense that we're doing more of it. I believe that we are really rooting for our icons and fellow Boomers to stay vital and keep going. Just keep going, because if you keep going, that means I'm keeping going. And an example of that is the Kirstie Alley experience on Dancing with the Stars. That woman is 60 years old and just kept falling down and getting back up. And every time she fell down, I just felt every single bone in my body hurt. And then when she'd get back up, I'd go, "Ah, keep going, Kirstie." And I just don't – does that make sense, that maybe that's something that that other people feel the same way?
Absolutely. I mean, there's just – you know, there's so much that is geared towards a younger demographic. And, I mean, you can look at just about any market that thrives on demographics. I don't know if there's one that doesn't. But, you know, even if you look at even the Christian music genre, you know, there's people that have, there's names, I won't name any names, but I've had them tell me, "Look, you know, I know I have a crossover appeal, but the industry wouldn't even consider me because I'm too old." But then look who shows up at these concerts. We talked about the Rolling Stones earlier. If you go to a Rolling Stones concert and tell me what the age spread is of that audience. Go to a Who concert and tell me what the age spread is of that audience. Bruce Springsteen, any of those people, and you're going to see kids to grandparents and every age group in between represented in those crowds. And I'm telling you, that there's, you know, if there is anybody that's feeling like they're down because of their age and they don't have anything to get back up for, I'm telling you, man, that's a lie. Don't
it
even
is.
Listen to those thoughts and get up, dust yourself off, because there's somebody out there that wants to hear what you have to say or could use what you have to contribute, because you still have value, tremendous value, that maybe a lot of people younger than us couldn't even begin to dream of contributing until they get around our age.
Well, an example of the demographic related situation with regard to the age group. We every year have occasion to get press passes, not every year, but the last couple of years, had occasion to get press passes to the Barrett Jackson Auto Auction. I'm sure you're familiar with what it is.
Oh, yeah.
And we walk in, because we're members of the press, we get invited to that, what they call the gala. And it's just masses, hordes of people going into one of the tents and having free food and listening to a band. And you look around, and it's all people our age. There aren't many, many other than boomers there. There are some older than boomers, but they're all baby boomers. The cars are baby boomer era. The bands are playing baby boomer music. And we just walked in, and Deborah said last year, she says, "It's all about us." And it is. It's absolutely amazing. It's all about our age demographic. And they're making millions of dollars that they're giving away and transferring ownership of those dollars and cars, and a lot of money being given to charity. And it's all about our demographic.
And we walk in there and we are in pure joy for like 4 or 5 hours. I mean, absolutely in heaven. It's fantastic. Well, and
it is.
There's another example. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say the other thing.
Randy, it's you.
Go.
Okay. Awkward crickets there. No, I was just going to agree with you there, Deborah, that it is. I mean, there's just, you know, people laugh and use the word classic almost as an insult, but, you know, classic is defined as classic for a reason, and there's an agelessness and a pricelessness that's associated with that. And people will find, if they're not already doing it, they're going to wind up, you know, comparing the value of their contributions to society and those, you know, near and dear to them based on the quality and the pricelessness of those things that we've just been talking about, whereas the cars, the music, you know, the quality of the inheritance that we're leaving them, for good or for bad. There's, you know, I'd like to think that despite some of the darker side of things that happened in the 60s and 70s, there's been a tremendous amount of good, a tremendous amount of innocence that people still reach back to and tap into to make the world a better place today. And maybe it's not quite so drug-induced now as it was back then. And there's a pureness of it that just maybe didn't exist then, but it's getting a second life today. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on your words there earlier, Deborah.
You know, that's quite okay. I love the concept of classic being ageless and timeless. And I wrote that down. I don't know if this is something that you just thought of, and it's pretty priceless there, my friend. That's awesome. Because it's true.
Well, remind
and
me I said it later because I'll probably forget I said it. So.
No, I like it a lot. And you're absolutely right. It is, it's just what value we place on youth and something fresh and new, and we would take away from something that's been around the block a few times, doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And I just said around the block a few times. In a case of a classic car, you know, that's okay. But in the case of a classic, you know, person, it's not so okay sometimes. I don't know. Is that making sense? Pete's looking
no.
at me like Pete's
no,
looking at me
not.
Like just stop talking, just stop talking.
Step away from your mouth, Deborah.
I knew what I meant. That was my Kirstie Alley moment. Get back up, Deborah.
No, I followed every word of it. So
thank
if
you.
You're in a bad
I knew
way,
you
so
did.
Am I. So
thank you.
Well, Randy, it's hard to believe that we've blown through an hour already.
Classically,
yes, absolutely. This has been a real joy having you on the show, and we're certainly glad that you could make a stop in your schedule along with the Boomer and the Babe show. Why don't you, if you don't mind, before we close off, go ahead and tell everybody how and where they can get a hold of you and any of your contact information that you feel like giving.
Okay. Well, the name of the website, I'll spell it out for everybody. It's B as in boy, O-O, M as in Michael, E-R-O, C as in cat, I-T-Y, and that's T as in Thomas, Y. So boomerocity.com. Or if it's easier for you to remember, think Boomer O City, just don't pronounce it that way. And, you know, that's the quickest and easiest place to find me. If you want to email me, if anybody has any questions or comments or knows somebody that they feel like I might be interested in interviewing, I'm always open for suggestions and corrections and things like that. But my email address is very easy. It's just remember that boomerocity.com I told you. But in front of that, if you'll just say Randy, R-A-N-D-Y, and the ampersand, or Randy at boomerocity.com, your email will get right to me. I'm busy during the days doing my real job, but I promise that I will respond as soon as I possibly can. I'm on Facebook under my name. I have two different accounts there. Twitter is out there. It's just Boomerocity, so if you search for me under Boomerocity, I'm out there. I don't tweet as much as a lot of people do, but everybody else is doing it, so I felt that peer pressure that I had to do the same thing. But those are the easiest ways to reach me. I love hearing from people from all over the world, and it's just all about relationships and remembering and having fun, and more importantly, leaving people with a smile, remembering the past, positively influencing today, and having a great impact on the future.
Well, again, thanks for being here, and you're certainly leaving us with a smile today. We've enjoyed the conversation. You've been a great guest, and we'll keep in touch with you and keep up with what you're doing. Maybe we'll do this again. We'll reprise this somewhere down the road, not too far off. And I want to thank you for joining us, and continued success with your Boomerosity.com.
Likewise to Boomer and the Babe, and I'll tell everybody I know about you guys. Have fun and try to stay cool out there in Phoenix.
We certainly will do that.
Thank you, Randy.
And thanks for joining us again.
Thank you all.
As always, we've had somebody that gives our listeners something to think about, something to talk about. It's been certainly an enjoyable conversation today. You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, where we bring good conversation to the world. Today, we brought you information and conversation with Randy Patterson of Boomerosity.com. You can listen to the Boomer the Babe Show live Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock right here on Blog Talk Radio, or you can always go to blogtalkradio.com/Boomer and Babe and pick up any of the archives at any time. They're up there from now until when the cows come home, as they say. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show. Check out boomerthebabe.com, see everything else that we do, including our ebooks and our mini books. And that's all that makes up the Boomer the Babe Incorporated. And we'd like to have you become part of it in any way that you feel comfortable. So make sure that the second half of your life is the best half of your life. And have a great day. Until next time, everybody, we'll talk to you later.
You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversations to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as PetePeters47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.